Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. If you're just joining us, our conversation about campus safety is entering its third part. Moderator Andy Downs will pose his next question in a moment, and Jim Fiesel from the Fort Wayne Police Department will be the first panelist to answer. Enjoy.
Depending on the organization we're talking about, as you pointed out, Tom, the demographics you serve, the mission of the organization, the size of the building, all these things come into play. But in the end, a place with daily activity has visitors coming to it, whether it's one person a month or thousands of people a day. Mm-hmm. What should a visitor be doing when they go to a facility, when they go to a campus? What should they be looking for? How can they help out, in other words? Jim?
Well, I think it still goes about what we've been talking about as far as being aware of your environment. You know, if there's something that's unusual, you know, you need to say something, like the old, if you see something, say something about it that doesn't look right. Employees of a building are pretty much familiar with that building, so they know what doesn't belong. Visitors, it's a little different, but if you see something that just doesn't look right, a backpack sitting in the middle of the floor or up against the wall, you know, if you see something like that, say something to somebody.
I think people occasionally feel a little odd. You know, I was in an airport one day and there was a partially drunken bottle of something, and I sat down and I saw it and there was no one next to it, and at first I was thinking, do I tell anybody? I mean, it just looks like it's a partially drunken beverage. But in the end, I did, because that's what you all tell me to
yes.
do.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else I should be thinking about doing, Julie?
No, I think that covers it.
Mm-hmm. It's asking a lot to ask our visitors to be cognizant of their surroundings and to be our eyes and ears. We want them to be, but the different dynamics for the hospital is that our visitors are coming in with a lot more things on their mind.
Right.
It's the death of a loved one, the diagnosis that they may have received for their loved one. So there's a lot going on in their minds, and we know that. So we really try to turn up our coworker involvement and our staff's involvement to make sure that when our visitors may not be completely aware of their surroundings, that we can make sure that we're watching out for them.
Mm-hmm. Another we think thing, of students I, the same way during finals week. They have other things sure. on their minds right. during that time. Go ahead, Jim.
Another thing I look at during these things, too, is what would my wife do at work? Mm-hmm. You know, if something happened. Is she aware of these types of things? You know, in my kids and just people in general, you know, do they think about these things?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just are in an environment now that we need mm-hmm. to start thinking about our own safety.
Yeah, and although you pointed out this is you think of it from a violence perspective, but it goes beyond that. It is the chemicals that get put right. together inappropriately. It's the fire that starts. It's anything that causes a threat, a harm to someone's person, and that's a very wide-ranging list. One of the challenges in the United States, and always has been, is weighing, I think one of you brought this up earlier, freedom and liberty with mm-hmm. security, and the balance shifts, and it can shift dramatically. People think about after 9/11, after things like Parkland, a lot of folks for a short period of time think about increased safety, and then that sort of goes away or it lessens, and they're back mm-hmm. to wanting more freedom and liberty. How does an organization balance that out?
Julie? I think being careful about how you implement safety precautions. So there can be a lot of people who bring forward ideas that seem reasonable, but in the end, they really don't increase safety. So really being careful and conscious about what your decisions are, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Tom? We'd mentioned taking prudent, reasonable steps to creating safety and security. Again, this is one reason why really at Parkview we felt a reasonable step was to create our own police department, to have that presence on our campuses as opposed to unarmed security. It's a balancing act that I think can be done with freedom and liberty in mind. We have not gone to the steps of wanting to put metal detectors, as I mentioned, having that image. I think it's just identifying your risks and taking those steps that are, that again are reasonable, to trying to mitigate the risk as much as possible.
And part of that, especially for a place like a hospital, is realizing the emotional situation of people who are coming in. Some coming in for very happy reasons, a new
right.
birth, some coming in for very, very sad reasons. And that will affect their demeanor when they enter the building.
It certainly does.
I look at it to where businesses want to arm their employees. Everybody has a right to carry a firearm, but not everybody is prepared to be involved in that gunfight. Mm-hmm. Taking a life is not human thing. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just unhuman mm-hmm. to have to do that. And if you're not prepared mentally and physically, then you probably shouldn't be doing that. And the other thing on the other side of that coin that I'm concerned about is when we show up and we see somebody walking through the building with a gun, we don't know if it's a good guy or a bad guy. We don't know who it is. A lot of times we don't know who it is. So it creates another issue when we arrive on the scene.
So for somebody who is, if a safety issue has taken place, an event has taken place, what's the best thing for the people who are there to do? In terms of getting out of the building, what do they do? Obviously, find the safety route, follow that route. But then if they see fire, if they see EMS, if they see police, what should they do?
That's a tough question to answer because every situation is so different.
Sure.
They're going to have to,
right.
Again, training and education are going to help them make the best decision. You certainly don't want to run at the officers, and you certainly don't want to have things in your hands. But, you know, as we started training and educating on active shooter in the hospital, one thing that I hadn't thought about coming from law enforcement to healthcare was, we know our staff can't just leave. They have patients to care for. So what is the best practice and what should we be teaching and training our staff to do? So there is no right answer. Leaving may be the right answer, staying may be the right answer. But the more we can, again, train, educate, talk about this, as Jim mentioned, I think the one where we didn't use, the more you do that, the more confidence people have in their decisions and their ability to handle a situation. So we just make sure we continue to have these conversations, and folks are going to have to trust their training to make the best decision. But certainly there are things you never do, and that's run towards the officers. You know, I always joke, I said, you can give them a hug later when we're all out behind the big fire truck,
right.
You know, but the officers are coming in as hyped up as you are. And you don't want to give them any reason to suspect that you're a threat to them.
Mm-hmm. Julie, part of what you do now is community-oriented policing mm-hmm. or training people. Mm-hmm. This is about relationship building, mm-hmm. isn't it?
It is.
I'm sure you have a couple of comments here about that.
Right, and I think that one of the things that we try to stress when we go out and train police officers, but also interact in the communities, is everyone's safety is number one. It's not just mm-hmm. officer safety that's number one. We want the 16-year-old kid to go home to his family. We want the dad to go home to his family. We want the officers to go home to their families. So safety all around is the most important. And there are times in which that can be accomplished by less than physical means. But certainly that's kind of always one of the last things that we want to do in order to control a scene.
Mm-hmm. Jim?
Just the last thing to elaborate on what Tom said. You don't want anything in the hands of the people once we get there, and you need to follow our commands. Mm-hmm. We may put you on the ground, we may handcuff you and take you to a location for debriefing because we don't know who you are. So I would just add that to what Tom had said.
Are there some good resources for people who are looking for information? Do you have any suggestions where people could find some good information?
Any of us would be available, certainly. Their local law enforcement agencies as well. We're not trying to pitch businesses, but I know there are some folks who do have some opportunities available where they can talk to companies. And I think the police department still has crime prevention office, which I know we used to go out to the homes and talk to folks about things they can do to help secure their home better.
Environmental design.
Sure.
Things, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can throw a plug out for me. I don't mind.
And I think even in an informal way, you know, when you see a police officer, if you have a question, I know sometimes it's awkward for citizens to approach officers, but having that opportunity to talk face to face is a great opportunity. Even if it's a small question or doesn't seem significant, that interaction is huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you all very much. Our guests today were Deputy Chief Jim Fiesel from the Fort Wayne Police Department, Julie Yunker, former Chief of Police here at IPFW, now with Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, and Tom Rhodes, former police officer with the Fort Wayne Police Department, now the director, Corporate Director of Public Safety at Parkview Health. Thank you very much for joining us. I would like to open it up to questions from the audience, if there are any.
All right, so I'd like to, first off, thank you for coming, taking time to talk over at IPFW today, but my question is directed towards
yes.
Julie and Tom. With your background in IPFW mm-hmm. And healthcare, mm-hmm. they are very public environments, and you in both cases have your dedicated officers on board, you know, to take care of safety. But in your case, in training or education, do the officers or the officers of each place, do they spend time to educate the teachers and students or the doctors and technicians?
Can I take this one first time?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, we brought a program called CRAZE, and it stands for Civilian Response to Active Shooter...
Events,
thank you. And that was a chance for not only our officers, we sent two to become instructors in that specific block, and then they brought it back to the campus and we did some open forums where we invited people over to Neff Auditorium and some other places, larger places, to sit in the audience and listen to some of that information, because that is really good information. That addresses really only active violence or active shooter, but it also opens the mind to think about being aware of your personal surroundings, knowing what your exit route is, mentally rehearsing whatever situation you're in at the movie theater. You know, where am I going to go? So, yes, there are trainings and educations that police departments can use to not only educate the officers, but also the community at large.
Yeah, I would certainly say the same thing. We really made it a focus to make sure we're getting out to our staff. We have 11,000 coworkers across the health system. I believe our goal this year is to make sure we touch 4,000 of those coworkers through active shooter training. Certainly our emergency preparedness drills, we engage the clinical staff, the support services folks as well to participate in those drills. We've been very fortunate at Parkview. Our trauma physicians have been actively engaged in our emergency preparedness. They've driven a lot of it. We invited a couple of trauma physicians and safety folks from Boston after the Boston bombing. We invited those folks to Fort Wayne, to Parkview, to speak to our staff and educate on their lessons learned. So we're in a constant state of education and training with all of our staff.
How much of that is training, but how much of that is maybe training the trainers? Can we count it as that?
We do some of that as well, yes.
Yeah, the idea being, of course, that you've gone out, gotten specialized training, you'll come back, you'll then train some other people who can spread it a little bit further. Do you worry about a loss in accuracy, so to speak, once you get to that second or third level of training?
I think for the bigger components of a program, we don't usually see a problem with that, you know, kind of communication going a couple steps out. Maybe some of the finer details, but some of the high points, I think, especially for programs that are meant to be train the trainer, those high points are pretty well communicated. And to kind of go off what Tom said, too, about public safety and lessons learned, that's one thing that people who aren't familiar with public safety, policing, and other public services, we really do share that information in some really great networks. And, you know, that's widespread across the country. So we have that benefit of looking at others and what they've experienced in order to make our places safer. Mm-hmm.
Jim, when you're working with an organization, are you thinking in terms of training people who will then be doing training, or is it you're training everybody, getting everybody up to speed?
I try to train them all off the bat. Mm-hmm. And if they develop their own program and don't require me to come back, that's fine. As long as, you know, they're following the guidelines that we set forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions?
I have several questions for all three of you. For Tom and Julie, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
How much input do you actually have on the physical plant dealing with safety and security? In other words, mm-hmm. what's the ballistics for the window?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are you prepared engineering-wise in the construction of the physical plant to prevent the vehicle problems that we've seen mm-hmm. in London and New York and UCLA? Do you have any input at all on this when the new buildings come in, and if so, what?
Yeah, I do. That's part of our presence on the construction team to make sure we have a security mindset as we're moving forward. Just from something as simple as which direction does the parking lot flow? I would rather it flow horizontal to the building as opposed to vertical, so a car doesn't have the chance to get a full head of speed up before it makes contact with the building. Certain bollards out in front of the entrances to make sure cars and vehicles can't get through, not only for criminal acts, but even an elderly person who may slip off the brake and hit the gas. We don't want them running through the doors. Our crime prevention through environmental design, our landscaping, there's often times where I've gone to facilities or our grounds folks and said, hey, we need this tree taken down. And they said, well, I'm going to hear from it, from the folks who love trees. I said, I understand that, but this is more important, security is. So I'll tell you, Parkview, I've been there 10 years now, and they have been very gracious to allow me to do the things I felt necessary. They've trusted my instincts and my experience. So
this becomes an issue then of cost, really, because when you start thinking about some things are easy, parking lot going one direction versus another, that's easy, that's striping and it's the orientation. But other things like changing the materials in the building, then you start running into cost issues.
You know, I've heard through some of the seminars, I'm sure you have through the Sheepdog Ministries, but 50% of all new construction projects is fire prevention. The fire industry has done a very good job. We have not done a good job on the security end of investing even a small percent of that money towards keeping our persons safe in our facilities. So that is something that we have begun to really look at, and we begin by our cameras, having quality cameras and our access control systems, which are not cheap.
Right.
But when we suggest that those go in certain places, we don't get any pushback on that.
They're actually very good. I've seen some of the images. They're really good images that you have at Parkview.
Isn't the upfront cost a lot less than retrofitting?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. You know, I'd rather put in the access control when we're building than have to go back into the drywall later, and you're going to double the cost.
So the engineers are actually listening?
Yes.
You have other questions?
There's a lot of blowback come back from the Parkland thing dealing with the shooter himself. In other words, people were saying all the alarms were there, nobody connected the dots, and something should have been done. So if people see and say, is the police service actually doing?
They
are
should
they
be.
Responding to
they
the scene?
They should
and
be.
The same? Well, they should be, but are they? And are you?
Locally, we are. And when we have those types of threats or those types of concerns, we address them immediately.
I would actually put in a quick plug for Fort Wayne PD. They have now probably close to 20 years worth of CIT officers, crisis intervention trained officers who are there. They understand mental health issues. So these are, when a situation arises, there is a protocol in place. There are officers on all shifts who are available to come out and help deal with those situations. So Fort Wayne deserves some credit in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But as you pointed out earlier, communication is always the big problem in events. Well, once again, thank you very much to the three of you for joining us. I want to thank the Helmke Library for letting us use some of this space, College TV for recording it as always, WBOI for making it available as well, and to the American Democracy Project for making it possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. If you missed any of our program, the full discussion can be found on our website, WBOI.org. Our music is by Mark Waldick. Folktales is next. Have a wonderful night.